Hello, everybody, and welcome to TYH. My name is Anglo, and with me I have Nike.
Hello.
And we have a guest, Niels Vigna. How are you doing, man?
Guten Tag. I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me, and it surely feels good to be back on a TRS podcast now, because back in the December of 2017, if I recall correctly, the very first podcast at all, not even just in the English tongue, was the late Black Lucas one.
I don't even know you've been on the TRS podcast, so that's cool.
Yeah, I remember listening to it. Rest in peace. Yeah. Memory eternal.
Good guy.
But yeah, so I guess just give a general overview of what you do, Niels. You do a lot of interesting stuff. You've been pretty active for, I guess, like a decade or so.
Yeah, sure. I was born in 1987. I'm going to be 35 this year. And I've been pretty much publishing and giving the occasional speech every now and then within German new right spheres ever since 2009, I believe, or late 2008. And yeah, that's what I've been doing most of the time. I got a bachelor's degree in historical and cultural sciences and a master's degree in history. And after I completed my master's studies in 2014, I went on to work with the main and prime new right and right-wing conservative publishing house in the German speaking world, which is Antaios Publishing House in Eastern Germany. I did that until January of 2018, and ever since then I've been kind of freelancing as a copy editor and translator and author. And I've been working with Arctos and with Richard Spencer and with, just let me think, what else have I done? With the Occidental Observer on single issues and single topics. So I kind of dabbled into alt-right or dissident-right waters ever since 2015 as well. And yeah, that's what I've been pretty much doing ever since. I've been doing some musical work on a very low-key level back when I was younger and still in university. But yeah, I guess everyone knows the deal when you finally start to get working a real job and starting a family and stuff like that. The beautiful things have to take a break, and maybe I'll be able to go back to that when I've settled a bit, but we'll see. So this is what I pretty much do. I write and I translate, and so far I've been able to accumulate quite a few people whose writings I've been translating pretty much on a assignment basis for various German-speaking publishing houses. And among those have been Jack Donovan, but also establishment figures, or at least more or less mainstream types like Camille Paglia and Martin van Krefeld.
Oh, nice. I didn't know you translated Camille Paglia. Was that for Antaios, or who was that for?
Yeah, there was quite a little scandal about that back in 2018, because Antaios was granted the license to translate Paglia's essay collection, Free Women, Free Men. They eventually employed three translators to complete it, because they kind of underestimated how much work it was. But I've translated about 80 or 85% of the essays in the book. But besides the actual content of the original edition, They also put in a new foreword by the wife of Antias's boss, Götz Kubitschek. If you want to get into him, check out the article in New York Times Magazine from back in 2017, which is called The Prophet of Germany's New Right. It was pretty pathetic a title, but yeah, of course it's about stirring up emotions. Well, she wrote a new foreword for that, and they omitted, I believe, two or three of the original essays for the German edition, because they did not deem them interesting enough for a German audience, and all of the stuff was not negotiated about with the publishing agency of Miss Paglia. And this publishing agency is located in New York, and let's say the people running this agency are very keen on publishing rights and money and stuff like that. And because of that, they eventually, after some liberal journalists confronted Camille Paglia about this, and that it was a new right and anti-humanist and anti-feminist publishing house that was publishing this work in German, they eventually threatened Antias with a lawsuit if they did not pull the German edition from the market. So they eventually did that, and the whole edition was pretty much erased, I believe. And that was that. I guess not too many people have read my translations of Camille Paglia, but it's been kind of fun. While translating, I always thought to myself, did they even busy themselves with reading some of Paglia's essays in this book before they struck the contract? Because I don't really see such content in Antias' writings. Like pro-abortion stuff and all these rather liberal or libertarian issues that Camille Paglia stands for, but yeah, this is how the whole story went down, and you're not to blame for not having heard of it, because it was just a little literary scandal in Germany, and after that everything vanished from the public.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of people, maybe not on our side, but somewhat adjacent, getting into Camille Paglia, and I just heard some of the stuff she was talking about or writing about, kind of obviously not really fitting, I guess, for a lot of those types of publishing houses, so it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's a classical problem that right-wingers, and especially the new right types that want to be somewhat of an intellectual opposition, but also distance themselves from the more hardcore right-wing types, always try to find some more or less mainstream figures or people on the fringe of the mainstream to latch onto them and to kind of turn them into hashtag our guys. That's the same thing in Europe as it is in the US, and Paglia, because she's kind of let's say butch feminist, and rejects those ideas of male fragility, and kind of tries to do the Jack Donovan from a female side, I guess, naturally comes to mind when you're desperately looking for a liberal but kind of open ally. Nonetheless, Camille Paglia would never openly associate with right-wing types, at least not with the kind of right-wing types we're talking about here, and she made that clear on various occasions. So yeah, maybe this whole thing was just an attempt to force this alliance of thought into being by just striking this contract without really getting into the thick of what Antias is publishing besides Miss Paglia's stuff. And yeah, it didn't quite work out because they overplayed their hand by freely changing the content of the book they agreed to publish.
Yeah, well, I think maybe this could be a good transition to just a general overview of maybe the German New Right or the German situation, I guess you could say, what's going on from a more dissident right or just dissident perspective in general.
Let's say when you're too edgy for the boilerplate center right wing party of the Christian Democrats, you basically have three options to turn to. And I've kind of laid that down in a piece that I originally wrote for an Arctis project, but eventually published on the Occidental Observer about operational hygiene, because I was arguing that those three prongs of attack, if you will, against liberal order have to be somewhat kept apart, because one can only pour so much of his energy into one of those activities, but not do all of them at once. And this is a general problem of people who want to be leaders of movements, that they try to do everything themselves and eventually burn themselves out pretty quickly. So you basically have the party politics side of things, which is incorporated by the Alternative für Deutschland party, the AfD, which was founded in, I believe, late 2013, originally as a party in opposition to the euro currency politics of the European Union and of the then German government. It was originally a splinter of the Christian Democrat Party, but it quickly became pretty big, because as it is nowadays, once a protest party is out there, it kind of attracts everyone who's unsatisfied with the status quo, and it quickly becomes way more than it was intended to be. And that's exactly what happened to the AfD as well. It managed to gather instant support and pull very interesting voting results, but it took quite some time until 2017, until the AfD went into the German parliament. Before that, it already managed to gather some seats in the European parliament, and it's been kind of, as the typical right-wing party, it's been kind of plagued by infighting ever since. Originally, it was the Founders League of economists that was kind of driven out by the more populist, national populist elements. And after that, those moderate national populist elements were more or less driven out by the more, let's say, hardcore populist elements. And there's always been some personalities changing sides every other day, the more opportunistic characters, the AfD has traditionally had a two-person leadership, and one former AfD head, Jörg Meuthen, also a former university professor, has just left the party about, must have been 3 weeks by now, 3 weeks ago. Also, as everyone stating that he had to leave because the radical and folkish elements in the party were going too strong. So it's going to be very interesting how the party is going to develop from now on, because right now they're very close to the dreaded status of a suspicious case for activities against the constitutional order. That's an official title you get when you're a bad boy in Germany, which officially means that the domestic intelligence service, the Bureau for the Protection of the Constitution, as it is called, is going to spy on you using intelligence methods, and not only reading your website regularly and printing it out and putting it into file cabinets. So this is probably going to happen during the year that this that their bad boy status is upgraded to this. And this usually in the past has been enough to kind of squash any populist right-wing party that was gathering kind of a followership. But right now, there's so much tension in the German population, and stuff has been escalating so far, also in the public recognition of the political landscape, that this assessment by the domestic intelligence service is probably not as sharp a sword as it was about 10 or 20 years before. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this whole situation goes down.
Do you think the assessment of the party being or like the hardliner faction gaining strength in the party, is that a accurate assessment in your opinion, or is that just a narrative people are going with to demonize the party in the public eye?
This has always been kind of the question, at least for the past like 3 to 5 years, because the media obviously paints a very different picture of the party as most people who are inside the party. There's always been somewhat of a chasm between the party chapters in the Western Hemisphere of Germany, the old Federal Republic, as it is called, and those chapters in the Eastern Federal States, which were incorporated into the larger Federal Republic after the Berlin Wall went down. In Eastern Germany, the party structure is dominated by more nationalist, populist types who are very, very large on immigration standpoints, and also motivated, at least have been motivated in the past like 3 years, by kind of social nationalist standpoints, like the welfare state and its overstretch by what some may call lazy minorities and stuff like that, has always been a topic in Germany, at the very least ever since reunification, that is since 1990. And the AfD in the eastern federal states of the German Federal Republic is kind of pushing this envelope really really tough right now, because it sells well and it drives them up in polls and also in elections. But in the Western Hemisphere of Germany, the party is much more dominated by former Christian Democrats and former members of the Liberal Party in Germany, which is kind of a economist party, not like the libertarians in the US or the Liberal Party in Britain. So their focus is much more on economical stuff. They are market economy junkies, and there's always some issue that those two factions are going to clash about. But the recent elections, not so much the nationwide federal election, but the smaller elections in the various federal states, have shown that this social national course is faring better than this rather economically liberal and socially traditional agenda that the Western chapters of the party have been following. I believe there are quite a few people in the West who are stubborn and not willing to let go of their more or less center liberal, classical liberal attitude, but sooner or later they will have to take a break on their market economy stance and be more populist, for better or for worse, or they are going to be driven out of the parliament of the federal state parliaments, at least in the Western Hemisphere of Germany.
Have they really made a difference in political terms since gaining seats in parliament?
Well, when we compare it to the one successful nationalist populist party that there was in Germany before, the Republicans, the Republikaner Party, which was successful in the early 90s, right after reunification, I'd say that they managed to drive the center-right party, the Christian Democrats, kind of into rhetoric that made them look like somewhat national populists as well, but not as much as in the early 90s, where the Republicans, the German Republican Party, scored kind of a surprise hit on the election stage and actually forced the Christian Democrats into hastily putting out an immigration act that was more or less openly designed to pull out the rug from under the Republican Party. And they actually managed to do that because at least the German electorate, and I believe it's pretty much the same all over the liberal West, is usually going to go with a party that is able to do the most. So it's going to be one of the big old parties. And as long as those parties are willing to kind of, sometimes strengthen and arm their rhetoric, especially when it comes to topics like immigration, they always manage to attract back whatever protest voters they might have lost to more populist parties in the election before. So the AfD did not push the Christian Democrats that much into a seemingly or faux right-wing direction as the Republicans did 30 years ago. But of course, the Christian Democrats had to adjust the rhetoric a little, especially before the recent federal election in late 2021, to go right back to their usual business after that. But they are in opposition now, so I guess we are going to see how all of this works out in the upcoming next federal election in 4 years. Or from now on, it's going to be 3.5 years or so.
Frankly, it doesn't sound all that impressive.
Well, it's not a revolutionary party. Of course, it is not. There's some talk of let's say fundamental reforms, especially among the youth wing of the party. But first, there's all this infighting within the party between the young radicals and the people who kind of just want to grill with less immigrants. and on the other hand, of course, the party is in the opposition position everywhere where it has gathered some seats in parliament, and is kind of cordoned off there. So there's not that much of a chance to gain any governmental seats in the near future, both on the federal level and on the federal state level. Their only hope to exert some real lawmaking power is in a coalition with the Christian Democrats. And so far, the Christian Democrats are staunchly opposed to that. Their new leader, Friedrich Merz, who was elected in very early January, I believe, one of his first statements after his election to the new party chairman was that everyone who would openly argue, probably also in private, anyone who would argue in any way for a coalition or for working together with AFD people would immediately be thrown out of the party. So there's not that much of a chance there, even after Angela Merkel has stepped down. We're going to see what the future holds, but so far it does not look very impressive. You're pretty right there.
So outside of government, does the party engage in any sort of activist way? Is there any extra governmental activities they engage with?
Of course, this has all been kind of slowed down by COVID. But before, the party has been, or some elements within the party, mostly the Eastern hardliners, let's call them that, have been very very active in pointing out the usual crime statistics, in showing up and giving speeches in the vicinity of especially heinous cases of rape and murder committed by immigrants. And there's been a ongoing press war against the kind of party foundation that was established like 3 years ago or so, that is designed to kind of push educational work and intellectual work supporting the party and supporting the values the party stands for. But it's always been kind of a problem because there have been so many characters, intellectuals, authors, and other people from actually very, very diverse political standpoints combined in this foundation, that it's hard to make them agree on a certain agenda. And so far, their educational work has not been very impressive either. They're probably going to be funded by the German state now that the AfD is still in the national parliament. But various social initiatives and also establishment politicians have been very, very loud and have been speaking out against this because the state is not supposed to fund fascists and stuff like that, the usual rhetoric. So we're going to see whether they decide to just change the party law so that this special party foundation cannot be supported by the state, or any party foundation cannot be supported by the state anymore, because every larger political party in Germany has kind of an adjunct foundation that does educational work and helps to finance studies and polls in favor of the party and stuff like that. So if they kind of twist the paragraphs to exclude the AfD foundation from such funding, I believe it would be necessary to exclude any party foundation from funding by the German state. That's what the party mainly does. And besides that, there's, especially with the youth wing in recent months, some street work going on that is kind of oriented at the it pulls its methods from the identitarian movement, among others. So the usual street propaganda work, putting stickers out, like having informational stations in the inner city and stuff like that. But besides that, there's not that much of an aggressive propaganda campaign going on. It's just the usual stuff parties would do before elections, I guess.
One thing I always found interesting about Germany, it's kind of a side point, but like, you know how they have, you said that the young members of the AfD have their booths and stuff. Like, I feel like in America that wouldn't last. I feel like Antifa wouldn't even allow anything like that.
Well, I mean, Contrary to that, there's a lot of groundwork done by conservative groups like Turning Point USA, which we have routinely criticized and ridiculed on this program. But you can't deny that they have a large ground presence across college campuses in,
but
in the country.
I probably wouldn't equate the Young Alternative with the TPUSA because I think they're probably a little more...
No, I think there is a legitimate difference there.
Maybe I'm just kind of the general point, because when I was in Germany, I have family in Germany, my mom was born there and so on. So I've been to Germany a few times. Just how the political situation is just different, because, you know, you have the city centers, which you don't really have here in the United States anymore. You know, like my city, for instance, had a city center, but they just like tore it down and put a shopping mall there. And so there's no like center place where people like meet or walk through. And I noticed when I was there, just various parties would have their stands, and even some somewhat radical parties would have their stands, and there wasn't all this like fighting and I don't know, violence that I feel like would happen here in the States.
Hmm.
That depends on the place very much, because I believe you've been in the rather Catholic area of Western Germany.
Yeah, for sure.
That's kind of calm when it comes to political violence, I believe. But that's not something someone should take for granted. Like in Göttingen, for example, which is in Lower Saxony, the federal state I'm from. That's also, Lower Saxony always was kind of a conservative federal state, because lots and lots of people who were driven out of the former eastern provinces of the German Reich eventually settled down there. But in the past, like, three decades or so, it's been completely turned around. And Göttingen, for example, is one of the most left-wing university cities in Germany. And Germany has quite a few very red university cities, like Berkeley and five of them all over the nation. Like in Göttingen, you would probably not last longer than about 10 or 15 minutes with an AfD booth in the inner city. Marburg is pretty much the same. I believe Freiburg is also kind of a red university city. So in Western Germany, you can get into trouble with stuff like that pretty easily. Also, if you're a member of a student fraternity and walk around in public with those caps and sashes on that show your affiliation with this or that Burschenschaft or whatever student fraternity you're a member of. In Göttingen, this will not go out very well, and probably you're going to be jumped by like 20 people within 15 minutes or so when you're walking around like that in public.
That's bizarre. Just for a fraternity affiliation.
Yeah, because fraternities are kind of a stand-in for elite Imperial German and Nazok worldviews, and so you have to be attacked as an agent of fascism and of the patriarchy when you're out in public and showing off that you're a member of a fraternity.
Yeah, I guess my the small town perspective that I had when I visited Germany kind of skewed my perspective. So it's definitely different in the bigger cities or the more red cities.
It's fundamentally different in Eastern Germany, at least in the more rural areas. In the university cities in Eastern Germany, you also have kind of an active Antifa scene, but on the other hand, Antifa is way more common, or has always been way more common in Germany or in Europe in general than it has been in the US. I believe ever since the Days of Rage and the Weather Underground in the 70s and stuff like that, there has been kind of a submerged Antifa scene in the US that did not really come to the public mind all that often until Trump was elected, of course.
Yeah, they're very obscure. Like, if you're into, I don't know, crust punk, maybe you heard of Antifa. But most people in the U.S. didn't even know what that was until very, very recently. Yeah, like, you couldn't... I don't even think I knew anyone who knew about Antifa growing up. And I wasn't interested in Antifa, but I was into a lot of punk music and kind of center-left politics. And, yeah, it was very, very subdued and underground. There wasn't as much of a radical student movement or anything. But that's kind of changed a bit, obviously.
Yeah, I've been reading some FBI files on various shadowy and very small right-wing parties or activist groups that were active in the 50s and 60s. And obviously, back in the day, there had to be founded a Jewish Defense League that would go into town and beat up activists of those small right-wing parties because they couldn't find any Goy Antifa to do that for them. So I believe Antifa has not really been active in the U.S. until kind of the student movement in the late 60s and the hippies that kind of spun out of that, and it lay dormant in the Reagan years and pretty much also in the 90s under Clinton, and kind of awoke from its slumber under the Bush administration. But back then it was all about being against the forever wars, the beginning forever wars, and also kind of taking a stand for the Muslims that were, of course, falsely accused of being a violent population and supporting terrorism all over the globe. And it just has become this whole anti-racist, anti-fascist, anti-white, anti-patriarchy, just anti-anything anarchist level of activism that we've seen in Europe for all these decades. When Trump ran for president and was eventually elected, that kicked it off in its full ugly power, I believe.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point now, like, where people I went to high school with, like, now, like, half of them have Antifa stuff and half of them don't. And before, they were just very obscure, so it's kind of an interesting phenomenon. Let's see. What else was I going to bring up? Is there anything else related to that, Nikkei, that you want to talk about?
Yeah, one thing that came to mind was I was curious if there's any sort of equivalent in Germany to the few deeply conservative universities and colleges that we have here. In the United States, it mostly tracks with these colleges having a evangelical Christian affiliation,
or like BYU
or Mormon, yeah. But the student body tracks very right wing consistently. Is there any examples of that in Germany at all?
Not that much, because there's not this tradition of private or religiously grounded universities or higher education centers. In Germany, traditionally, all this educational system is state-funded and state-controlled. And only recently, I believe, it really started, like, after 2000. There's been this push by various huge companies to kind of build and fund their own universities. But those are more or less just MBA training centers, so you don't really get to study any humanities there, at least from what I've gathered. The universities everyone thinks about when talking about university and student life are all state funded. They sometimes have certain centers on campus that are privately owned, but that's not a common thing. And because of that, they're legally obliged to be open to anyone. So you can't really sort out the students that apply to be let in on in such institutions based on their religion or their ideology. And so universities are all in all pretty liberal institutions, both when it comes to the students as well as the teachers, the faculty. There's always been certain very few famous conservative professors, but they never managed to concentrate many of them into one single university, and they've always been scattered around the Federal Republic. So if you let's say you're interested in studying law, and you want to be the student of a famous conservative professor of public law, you would have to make amends and be okay with other very liberal law professors teaching you on other subjects. There's not a single conservative university or a single conservative law school or anything like that you could go to and be sure that you're not fed any, let's say, cultural Marxist stuff or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I feel like even some of the more conservative universities, that's changing. Like, I've seen protests from, like, BYU of the students, like, demanding for more BLM stuff and an end for white supremacy. So I wonder how long that's going to last here. That's something that's interesting to think about.
Frankly, I don't even include BYU as one of, like, the, like, full examples of the phenomenon of a conservative university. I mean, it's definitely more to the right of most institutions, but there's no, like, religious requirement to go there. You have to agree to practice, you know, religious lifestyles, but those are routinely ignored and skirted. I think it, you know, it's going to follow the way of Georgetown University on a long enough timeline.
Well, maybe, where, but you still have to, like, follow the no coffee and short hair and no beards and no premarital sex if you go there.
People don't follow that. Well, some do, but
I'd say most of them do, because most of the people that go to BYU are LDS, like 90% of them. But anyways, go on.
Yeah, there's been a leak for educational freedom formed like in summer of last year or so, because this whole cancel culture thing is as kind of a specter is pretty big in Germany right now in academia. But yeah, there's been organizations like that ever since the late 60s and early 70s, because a lot of traditionally liberal conservative professors and members of the faculty felt kind of threatened by the student movement back then, and they were right on that. So they founded various organizations going in and doing press releases about how important it was to have different views on campus and the free marketplace of ideas and stuff like that. But yeah, that did not really work out well, as we can see nowadays. And this new organization is probably going to go down the same lane, because yeah, it's all about tolerance and stuff like that. But we all know that tolerance is not there for us. So what's there to gain? But anyway, this was the party wing of the party lane one could go down if one wanted to do something right-wing in Germany. And the second lane, I think, would be the new right lane, and the intellectual right lane, this whole metapolitics thing. Well, I personally am not too fond of the term metapolitics and the concept anymore, after having spent more than a decade within the milieu. There are not too many, but quite successful private organizations in Germany that do small-scale educational work and kind of school people in private about right-wing talking points and political concepts. One of these, probably the most famous by now, the Institute für Staatspolitik, the State Policy Institute, kind of like NPI in the US back when it was a thing. I think it's bankrupt now. Has been around ever since 2000, and it was founded as an open challenger to private left wing study centers that were doing liberal and left wing radical educational work, and it's kind of I'm not sure about the exact number, but it must have been like kind of 1,000 young people that have been through educational events and schoolings by this institute by now. And of course, some take it just as a matter of entertainment and never go anywhere, and some listen to what is said there and just don't follow up with anything. But especially ever since the AfD started to grow big and attract a younger and more radical and fundamental crowd, this Institut für Staatspolitik, the IFS, has done good work in schooling these younger people who hopefully will become party officials in like 5 to 10 years, if the party is still around then, and then will be able to steer the party ship through the heavy weathers of public opinion and election cycles with a strong theoretical background. Whether this is necessary to do such things is debatable, but of course, institutions like this, and there's only one or two other that can be compared to the IFS in all of Germany. The work these institutions do is, of course, very helpful and is a good thing. And I'm glad to have been and still in some small ways be part of it. It's also fun every now and then, especially when there are larger events, which have been, of course, hampered by Corona as well. But hopefully we'll come back in, say, 1 or 2 years. Obviously, the German domestic intelligence has already set its eyes on these institutions as well. But as I said, being watched by the Fed is not all that intimidating in Germany as it has been 10 years ago or so, I think, at least to younger people.
I see. Are there any institutions in Germany, like civic institutions, that, you know, consistently tend towards the right?
I don't really think so. You mean like anything from just a
popular civic life organizations, like community groups, or even like a more abstract institutions like sports?
Not that much. Anything that is not party affiliated or an organization that is founded by already existing right-wing circles is pretty much just born out of the moment, then kind of is pulled into this rightosphere, and then usually splits up into the people that are not comfortable with that and those who are, and then it eventually gets absorbed into the already existing right-wing circles. That happened back in 2015 when the migration crisis started with the public gatherings all over Germany with people protesting. It all started out with protests against immigrants importing their tribal conflicts into Germany, but pretty soon became gatherings protesting immigration in general. And so they were very quickly preyed upon by the media, which painted them as Nazis, obviously, as any opposition in Germany is painted, and were also preyed upon by, as I said, the already existing right-wing circles, which kind of latched onto them and used them as a mass footing to spread and to publicize their ideas, which had quite an effect, but not in real numbers. It made more people interested in certain national populist talking points and in the right-wing publishing scene. We also noticed that in sales numbers, but it did not have any really lasting effect. And eventually this whole protest movement was kind of dried up by media and politics antagonists, and there's not really anything left of it. Nowadays we have those huge freedom marches, if you want to call them that, based on the Canadian the iconic Canadian protests against COVID measures, but those are kind of catch-all movements which incorporate both very left-wing and very right-wing people, and it's an open question if anything can really grow out of that that is gonna last. And we saw kind of the same thing with the peace movement back in 2014, especially when there were the first shots fired between Russia and Ukraine. That's probably gonna repeat itself right now because of the situation there. But back in the day, that did not really manifest into a political, of course, especially no right-wing political movement. And I'm quite sure that it's gonna be pretty much the same right now.
What do you make of the smaller hard right parties in Germany? The one that's been of interest to me that I can't really find a ton of information on, but I do from time to time see them making headlines, is this the Third Way Party?
Yeah, those smaller parties, of which pretty much the Third Way, Der Dritte Weg, is the only one worth talking about, are interesting, and the public the regular public outcries about them are quite funny to me, especially when they show up somewhere and doing a uniform march. It's funny to see because it's actually forbidden in Germany to wear uniforms at political events.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
For obvious reasons, but they kind of it's always playing around with law enforcement, because in all these political crime paragraphs, there's enough left open for any policeman or for any prosecution who's trying to do someone in, to interpret them in a very state-friendly way. So if there's any opposition, you will surely find some political crime paragraph that can be used to squash it. But on the other hand, they seem to have some pretty good legal advisors. Then they have regularly managed to pull off some stunts like that before COVID. Of course, it's going to be interesting to see what they are going to do if this whole situation comes down eventually, and what's going to be left of them. But they obviously don't stand a chance in elections. But on the other hand, I don't believe that this is their real goal. It's kind of like NJP in the US. They're especially interesting because they incorporate various areas of activity that they have taken from other social revolutionary or national revolutionary movements in Europe, like Casapound in Italy, of course, and Bastion Social in France, like putting up not exactly homeless shelters, but kind of clothing centers where poor families can get clothes for all of their children and stuff like that for like €2 a piece, whereas you would pay kind of seven times the price in a usual clothing store, which is interesting and to my personal taste, a very good thing to be done. I've always admired what Casapound was doing with their activism for poor and homeless Italians, especially when they walk around and present homeless Italians with little Christmas treats and stuff like that, before anyone sneers at kind of giving the homeless presents. You have to know that, especially in Rome, but also in pretty much all larger Italian cities, you have like 80% immigrants among the homeless, and so by only gifting the Italian homeless with stuff and trying to help them get off the streets and find housing and stuff like that, Casapound is making a really strong point for a Völkisch welfare state, if you want to view it in that way. But anyway, it's kind of comparable to the NJP, I guess. They are surely not going to be elected. Sorry if I'm hurting anyone's feelings here, but...
I don't think that's a controversial statement.
Okay, but that's not the point of it. The point of it is creating a platform for activism and propaganda, I guess, and they're doing quite well with that. Of course, there are certain things that the state is very worried about in their agenda. But as far as I gathered, they're not all that the third way now. They are not very openly hostile towards minorities and stuff like that. They just focus on being pro-German and pretty much pro-white. And that's their main platform. And this is something many right-wing people should be able to support. Of course, it's not a successful brand and stuff like that, and not many jobs will be created by the third way, not as many jobs as have been created by the AfD at least, but I guess that's a matter of personal taste. So far I haven't seen that much of third way activism that was I don't know, too controversial within right-wing circles, I might not be sufficiently informed. Anyway, they're interesting as an activist group, let's say, not exactly as a political party.
Sure.
And activism would be kind of the third leg of the right-wing stool in Germany. Up until recently, you've had the identitarian movement, of course, that has kind of fizzled out, both in Germany and Austria, within the past 2 or 3 years, pretty much due to COVID, but also due to various other reasons. The prime movers and shakers are getting old by now. Formally, I believe the movement was officially limited to people up until the age of 30, and by now, pretty much all the old caterers should be around 31, 32, sometimes older. And there has been a new generation, more or less, emerging within the past like 18 months or so, I'm just a distant watcher. I've never been that much affiliated with the identitarian movement, so I'm kind of estimating here, but they seem to come back in another form. They have shed many of their outrageous public stunts for a little more Patriot Front like appearance and ammo, because before it was kind of one of their main points to always show one's face and to have faith in doing the right thing, doing the legal thing, and just expressing an opinion freely and stuff like that. And that has been, that has led to many legal and societal problems for their members. So they kind of took the Patriot Front pill, and now they are doing street activism every now and then, wearing bandanas over their faces, of course, because you have to cover your mouth due to COVID regulations. And if anyone's interested, just check out some Instagram accounts. I believe it's always something with Activist Wien would be one, I believe. It's pretty easy to find, and you're going to see the parallels between them and Patriot Front. And it wouldn't surprise me if there has been also some actual contact between those groups. That's pretty much what there is to be done if you want to go the real activist way. And in the past, there has been quite some media outrage about prepper groups, especially those involving people from the Federal Armed Forces. But personally, I think this is just a German over-exaggeration version of stuff like Adam Waffen in the U.S., pretty much just, it's pretty much just fat stunts that might have been pushed a little too far every now and then. But in the end, I have yet to see any right-wing terrorism or so-called right-wing terrorism in the Western world ever since 1945 that has not been mainly orchestrated by any intelligence service.
Right. Now that's their favorite playbook.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. And also, they're just waiting for that event, and they'll create it, or they'll even. One thing that they do here in the States is that we have a lot of like prison gangs that are supposedly white supremacists, and they'll use that as an example of like white supremacist or right wing terrorism when it's just gang warfare, like people fighting over drugs, you know, and. Yeah, and if it's not there, they'll try to create it. That's how it's always been, unfortunately.
Go ahead.
Especially during the Cold War in Western Germany, because obviously during the Cold War, Germany was kind of the focal point of attention, and of course also of intelligence attention. They were kind of funding every side at the same time. There was this huge effort concerted by the CIA called the Congress for Cultural Freedom. I'm pretty sure that it has been talked about before on TRS on TRS shows. I think Borzoi must be deeply into stuff like that, which funded various newspapers and magazines and cultural events and organizations all over Europe. But on the other hand, the intelligence services, such as the British MI5, is that the domestic or the external? Anyway, the British Foreign Intelligence Service had also its fingers in the early NPD, which was the first gathering party of nationalists in Germany. Before, there had been the Socialist Reich Party, which was surprisingly pretty successful in the early 50s and was the first party to be officially banned in Germany by the newly founded constitutional court back in 1952.
Yeah, I was actually reading about that party last night. I only stumbled upon it as I was reading about certain decorated veterans in Germany from the Second World War, that the many veterans were part of the founding demographic of that party.
Yeah, that's an extremely interesting story in and of itself. Also because this party had some ties to Francis Parker Yaki, and Yaki's The Enemy of Europe was kind of intended as some sort of philosophical manifesto of the SRP, but he managed to release it only after the party had already been banned. So this little book was kind of hanging there in midair, and was eventually also pulled from circulation, and I believe also destroyed by the German authorities. The SRP is a very interesting topic in and of itself, and even this surprisingly successful, as I've said, and pretty openly post-fascist party was tied to certain people that were paid by various foreign intelligence services. So it's kind of like people sometimes talk about the anni di piombo, the years of lead in Italy, where right wing and left wing militants would shoot each other up openly on the streets, just as if it was nothing, and the carabinieri, the militarized police, would also just gun people down, which they suspected of carrying weapons and stuff like that back in the 70s and the early 70s. But the same amount of suspicious state involvement into militant struggle and political radicalization had been going on in at least in Western Germany, not so much in Eastern Germany, because in Eastern Germany there officially was no nationalism or even national socialism, because it was against the party line. Was going on in Western Germany for about all the time ever since 1945 to at least 1975 or the early 80s, but not with people killing each other on the street in the open that much. There was more like any other year they would arrest by chance some guy who would lead the authorities to like 50 weapon stashes he had hidden somewhere in the woods. With machine guns and mortar rounds and stuff like that. And just the night before he was scheduled to talk to federal prosecutors, he would be found hanged in his cell, and the stuff just kept repeating over and over. So even the mainstream media, which was very fond of how the government was handling such things, was eventually growing suspicious. And the main coup that showed the state involvement in pretty much everything that is or was more or less radical right in Germany was the first attempt of the federal government to ban the National Democrat Party, the NPD. As I said, it was the one large gathering party of nationalist forces after the Socialist Reich Party was banned. Back in the 60s, in 1969, the NPD almost managed to win seats in the federal parliament, was kept from attracting as much votes only very shortly before the election by a combined effort of various anti-fascist and social democrat organizations, of course with more or less clandestine help of the government. But anyway, they tried for the first time to ban this party in, I believe, 2000. And there are officially huge hurdles to take to ban a political party, because banning political parties is very authoritarian, and there's certain problems with authoritarianism in Germany. So they tried, and they eventually were kind of dumbfounded when a main witness against the party was presented with certain reports he had made to the aforementioned Bureau for the Protection of the Constitution. And after that, it got into kind of a snowball effect, and eventually it was found by the Constitutional Court that there was, pronounced it, was no possibility to demonstrate that the party was independent of state authorities, because I believe like 35% of leading positions in the party nationwide was controlled by people who were on the government payroll and the domestic intelligence's payroll. So pretty much the whole party was just a muppet of authorities, and they still try to ban it because it was like this jack in the box that was always that would always be pulled out to scare people. But eventually, when certain especially immigrant lobby groups lobbied hard enough because of certain violent activities that had been going on, they tried to ban the party, did not succeed, and they tried again like 5 years ago or so, and they still did not succeed. The party is still around, but they used this this second attempt to publicly declare by the court that having a biological notion of the term people, like you can only be a member of the German people if you have German blood in you, that this was officially a viewpoint that is outside of the constitutional order. And by expressing such a viewpoint, you pretty much declare yourself an enemy of the constitution, and must be aware that you can be subjected to federal prosecution being sniffed out by the domestic intelligence service and stuff like that. So it's been more or less a propaganda coup and not really lawfare, because, as I said, lawfare against political parties is a problematic thing in Germany, but they kind of managed to get more out of it by declaring the biological viewpoint about a people more or less illegal in this second court case. And they could have won if they had simply banned the party and the people had been dispersed into other parties or just had just founded a new one.
Now, they did have a representation in the European Parliament back in 2014. What are your thoughts on how that ended? What's your conclusion on what it was able to accomplish?
Well, since there is not really that much to be accomplished in the European Parliament if you're not a member of the establishment, it's of course a nice move to be a fringe party, a more or less fringe party, and to gather seats in Strasbourg. But on the other hand, there's not much political leverage you could make use of there. Of course, it's a nice source of funding that can probably be redirected into the structures of the respective party, I believe. I'm not that much into party financing and how that works out in the European Parliament, but I believe it's better to have a seat there than to not have, especially from a propaganda viewpoint. But not much politics there either.
Right. I mean, my view of the European Parliament, as far as I'm concerned and interested in, is a it has been and can be a platform for members of smaller, more radical right parties to express their views in a public setting that gets attention. And, you know, while you're not there making a decision, like decisions for the body, you're able to project a viewpoint before an official organization, and it, you know, legitimize certain views within a broader sense of like what the mainstream considers legitimate.
Yeah, I'd agree on that. I mean, look at how Nigel Farage, for example, managed to use the European Parliament as his personal stage, or people like this Korowicz Mikke guy from Poland.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe he's all that powerful in Poland or in the parliament, but he's just a good actor. He's strutting around there with his mustache and just kind of shitposting IRL, and people all over Europe, right wingers all over Europe, love him for that. Even if he's probably a very anti-German guy, for example, I know of quite a lot German right wingers who just adore him personally and people like him in general. Normally, or in a better Europe, at least to me, this whole Moloch of the European Parliament should at least be useful to connect people and for networking among the nationalist and national populist parties that are around in Europe. But so far, this has never worked out really well. There has been an attempt of creating a right-wing European super party, or at least a working group, a task force, if you will, back in the late 90s, I believe, or in the early noughts. But that didn't work out because of national sentiments, because probably pretty much no one, except maybe for the French and the Spanish, really gets along with the Germans and various Eastern European peoples also have their problems with one another and stuff like that. So there's this new faction in the European Parliament that's Identity and Democracy, I believe. That's right to the European People's Party's faction. That was kind of dominated by Lega and I believe the Front National, when it was still called that, now the Rassemblement National. But I don't really think there's that much going on there as well. I mean, it still exists, that's something. But so far, it remains to be seen whether they can exert any real political power, and I highly doubt that.
Do you think parties like Front National demonstrate that getting too large is something that can undermine the commitment to hard right policies for a political party? I mean, that was my assessment of the absolute mess that became, but I'd like to hear your opinion on it.
Well, personally, I think that, I mean, there's always this talk about reality has a fascist bias and the people that are marked by reality and what have you, but the majority of any given population, or at least Western population, will never be hard right or on the right side of the political spectrum as we perceive it with our Western education. Most people just want to be left alone. Maybe with less foreignness, of course, but they just want to be left alone, which is a rather liberal standpoint in and of itself. And by committing to social changes, like the Rassemblement National did lately, to kind of siphon off some protest voters from the lower strata of society. You can of course make some amends, but if you happen to be elected based on such talking points, you have to deliver afterwards, or you're going to be punished pretty hard in the next election. And so far as I know, the Front National, Rassemblement National, never really managed to find a coherent standpoint on such things, because their officials usually are higher class people, and they tend to bond with people from their own social class and with their own social status. So it's often hard for them to appeal to the working class and the blue collar types, which may still make up the majority of the electorate. And this is pretty much a right wing populist party problem all over Europe, as it is in the US, but because of the two-party system there's not that much of a choice for anyone who has some vaguely right-wing ideas or just wants to be left alone without foreigners. Whereas we've seen in France how easy it is to diverge the diffuse right-wing or at least center-right electorate, and how badly the Rassemblement National was shaken by the sudden emergence of Eric Zemmour, who kind of, yeah, just stole his talking points from Jean-Marie Le Pen, because Jean-Marie Le Pen is an ethnic Frenchman and not of the ethnicity as Eric Zemmour is. Le Pen was shunned for it, and nobody can really get to Zemmour, even though he has been found guilty of like incitement to hatred and stuff like that. But I guess he can only shake that. He can simply shake that off, and his followers still love him for that. Which was not the same case with Jean-Marie Le Pen. He was even disowned by his own daughter. Remember that? And yeah, I mean, Jean-Marie Le Pen was. Jean-Marie Le Pen was a war hero before, from the war in Algeria. So, yeah, if two people do the same thing, it's not the same thing.
Yeah, of course. Quality of the person matters. I hate to cut it short, but I'm going to have to get going soon. Is there anything else, Nike, you wanted to talk about real quick before we head off, or any comments?
Oh, I didn't have anything else. I mean, do you want to get to the last show comments?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Do you have
them? Do you need the link?
I could open them real quick. I'll get them. We're going to start off with Lemonhead. He posted on February 3rd. Had to pause to look up what mathcore is. Looks like gay emo Slipknot to me. And then David Duke Newcomb responds, lots of math rock and adjacent genres is super cool if you're into very complex music. So I'm not the biggest into mathcore. Do any of you guys have experience with that?
Well, a little. You go first, Nikkei.
Oh, well, I don't have much to say on it. In high school, I looked into it and out of curiosity and listened to some. But
you're really good at math at school, so you wanted to find some rock music that fit in with that.
I found it just curious. A math-based music genre.
Well, it's not really math, but yeah. Like, is Dillinger escape plan? Are they considered?
I think Dillinger would be the prime example.
Yeah, I like them growing up, so I guess I do like some of it, but I didn't really get too deep into it. How about you, Niels?
Well, I kind of like chaotic music every now and then, and mm-hmm. Dillinger sounds chaotic, of course, but that's just because they got mathcore is basically just people spurging out on how good they are on playing their respective instrument. And it's also kind of a, just as all nerdy things are, it's kind of a almost exclusively white scene, as much as it is still around. I believe what's there nowadays that could be compared to it, like Architects or this whole very technical metalcore stuff, is another genre again. I mean, genres are always a problem. I believe mathcore is more or less over by now. That's been a thing back when emo also was a thing. But it's I wouldn't call it emo. It's more about technical precision and perfection, and much less about kind of screaming your heart out about how mean girls are and stuff like that.
Was the emo scene big at all in Germany when you were a kid?
I haven't seen many of those people around. In Germany, there's always been a large gothic scene, and yeah. I believe the emo kids that were around kind of rode the coattails of the goth scene. So I didn't really notice them back in the day, but I did very well notice them online, because I've always been a MySpace kid back when I was like 15 and 16 years old. Back when MySpace was still for the people and not just a publishing platform for record labels. So it was, if anyone, as I was interested in what's going on in the US, it was pretty much impossible to ignore or to unsee the emo emergence. But this kind of faltered pretty quickly, I believe, in like 2008. 2010, and ever since ever since metalcore and deathcore have been around and have kind of replaced that, so it's been a natural thing to do, and I believe it's the better choice. Deathcore over emo anytime.
I might have to disagree with you there, but that's for another time.
Yeah, we should do a music show. There's so much to discuss.
Yeah, there's a lot of content there, because there's just so much, even just on mathcore, just to talk about, and its influences and all the different branches, I guess, of it and so on. But
or you could just pull the Vark and say that guitars are Negro instruments.
Yeah.
all this metal music is for shit people.
Yeah.
And you only get into Norsk Arisk keyboard wanking.
Yeah. Yeah, with like the Korg synthesizers and the trumpet samples and stuff like that.
Yeah, but he got he became a legend by that alone. Also by stabbing Euronymous, but yeah. I mean, pretty much everyone who has a vague idea of who Vark is has also listened to the Philosophem album by Bursum. And I remember I have really fond memories when back in the day when I was still at school, and we had a sports course that was offered where you could get a grade on your ability to ski. And that was something very interesting to me, because I have never been that much of a sports guy, at least not a school sports guy. But that was one of my best sports grades I ever got, because skiing is something I really enjoy. And back when we had the like exam week, where we would actually drive down to Austria and like for 5 days ski in front of our teachers and be be awarded grades based on that. We would just do insane drinking in the evening, like as much insane drinking you can do when you're like 17 years old. In the US, you could do no drinking when you're 70 years old, but that's another story. And we would always listen to this insane track, Rundgang um die transzendentale Säule der Singularität, of the Philosophem album, which is like 23 minutes and 11 seconds long and pretty much just contains a loop that goes wee-oh, wee-oh, and the same four tones struck on the synthesizer, like dun 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 dun, and combine that with
and
beer
expects
and
expects you to take that as a very impressive and a shining example of his talent.
I believe there's pretty much some philosophy or even some pagan religious motifs behind that, but it's kind of hard to grasp, I guess. I believe many people. I don't really know whether the Burzum fandom is actually divided between the keyboard enthusiasts and the guitar enjoyers, but I can imagine there's some ongoing dispute whether his jail phase was the better one or whether he's gone to his original qualities now that he's out in the open and playing guitars again. But as I said, music is something you could talk like for days about and wouldn't still paint a complete picture of what's out there in terms of not only dissident music, but music that's prone to be enjoyed by dissidents. Let's call it that.
Yeah, there are a lot of those different scenes. You could see music that maybe not created by dissidents or somewhat, they might have had an influence a little bit. You know, you see that in the industrial scene or even noise sometimes, or martial industrial and all these different things. And this, that's a lot of content right there.
Yeah, obviously. And I mean, of course, there's always some purity spiraling going on, but I believe it was Thomas Rousseau, correct me if I'm wrong, who said that the young people must be fetched from where they are. So if they enjoy rap music, then there should be some pro white rap music for them to get into the scene. And yeah, look at where we've gone from that. Now there's Mr. Bond about to be put in court in Austria for his misbehavior. I guess I should look that up. Haven't heard a lot about this whole case ever since news went around that he had been arrested. But anyway,
let's see what else. This is from Zoomerman, one of our loyal commenters. He said, "Yo, this episode came out fast, which is not usually the case for us. We like to take good breaks." And then David Duke Nukem comes back again. He says, "Two episodes in like a week? Who are you guys?" Yeah. Yeah, that was weird. Dude, two episodes in a week is very rare for us.
Next thing you're going to do is have an RSS feed.
Yeah.
Ooh, I don't know about that one.
And after that, there's the obligatory Telegram chat.
No, I might be interested in doing a Telegram thing. I've always debated setting it up. I just gotta get around to it. And there's just a lot of different comments about the manifesto from Matthew Harris, Dr. Matthew Harris, which was very interesting. Apparently they deleted it off of archive, which I didn't know. But very controversial.
Gone from archive, not my hard drive.
Yeah. But, where can people find you, Niels, online?
I'm pretty much everywhere. I mean, of course, a lot of the content I post is in German, but maybe there are certain people who want to improve their language skills. And besides that, I'm always having an eye on the Anglosphere and sometimes get in on those topics as well. So of course there's Twitter for everyone who still has an account. You can find me under the handle, you should jot that down if you actually want to look it up. It's scototaxis. That's the biological term for the desire to be in darkness. It is like when you lift up a stone in your garden and you have all those little creatures under there who run away to the next dark place. That's what's called scototaxis. So that's the usual at, and then you have SKOTOTAXIS. But I also have one of those Linktree style things. You can access that from my Twitter profile, and you find anything else there. And on YouTube, I have a channel for now that you can probably find best by my full name, or you use in a single word, Alt Write, as in writing something down, Wegner, that is Wegner. And I have some German stuff there, podcast appearances and stuff like that, and some live streams I did back in the day with Tyler Hamilton when he was still doing the Euro Bureau of Literaturo, where we talked about Carl Schmitt's political theology and its influence on modern thinkers like Giorgio Agamben and stuff like that. So if you're into big brain stuff, then you could also give that a try. That's pretty much all I have to offer for now to a Anglophone audience, sadly, but one can only work 24 hours a day, I guess.
Yeah. Well, maybe now it's time for the Anglophones to step up their language learning game. But anyways, thank you for coming on, and thank you guys for listening, and it was a pleasure talking with you, Niels.
Yes, great talking.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure to talk to people I regularly listen to on my own.
Oh, cool.
And when you want to pull off this whole music discussion thing, I'm always up for it. Call me in if you're 100%. Discussing black metal and neo-folk.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, all the Death and June lore and the various bands that split off of that, there's a lot of stuff there to talk about.
Oh, people are going to get really mad about that because it's so homo-adjacent, but I guess we can... Yeah.
We've broached that on the show before.
But anyways, see you guys later.
See ya.
See ya.